You're listening to the Thank God for Nostra podcast.
All right. Welcome to another episode of the Thank God for Nostra podcast. Today I have with me Jimmy Song. Thank you for joining me, Jimmy. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
doing well. Finally back to podcasting after a very long hiatus. During which I got to meet you face to face for the first time, down at the, Thank God for Bitcoin conference in Nashville. And, I figured my first question would be a softball. Thank God for Bitcoin or, the big Bitcoin magazine conference.
Oh, thank God. Yeah, I mean, the big one was just such a kind of political sideshow with a lot of bankers and people like that. Those are not my people. And yeah, like with the Secret Service and, you know, the bag policy and all that, it just wasn't very fun in many ways. I mean, don't get me wrong, I enjoyed it still, but it was, I think, Thank God for Bitcoin is a lot better.
Yeah, it was fantastic. I had not been, well, I met Jordan originally last year, right after the Thank God for Bitcoin podcast in Miami. I mean, Thank God for Bitcoin conference in Miami. And yeah, so it was my first time going to that conference, despite having run this podcast for the last year. So that was a huge privilege and awesome to meet a lot of the Christian Bitcoiners in the space and also like a lot of people that I already knew. I got a text message halfway through from my wife because her friend's dad was at the conference. So lots of connections there, but, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about Nostra, obviously. And especially about kind of the Christian dimension, a couple of notes that you pushed out there recently, caught my eye, specifically having to do with community and virtue. So that's kind of where we're headed in this conversation. But to start with, I figured I'd ask, give me your Nostra background. What makes you excited about Nostra? Are you optimistic about it? Are you pessimistic about it? Just give me kind of your take. Like, are there huge problems with it that you have a different take on? Or is it kind of like all going in the right direction in your mind?
Yeah, I mean, I think like most people, I got into it back when, Twitter was censoring some stuff right before I think Elon had bought it, and people were using Nostra for a lot of stuff. And I got into it, and I realized like this could be the infrastructure of like a parallel internet, because the current internet is very centralized around name servers and things like that, and it's a lot of squatting on domain names and things, and obviously a lot of big tech companies that have everything centralized. So for me, Nostra is what the internet was originally supposed to be. And the original architecture of the internet was decentralized, where a lot of people were running their own servers and serving up content and so on. It's only because people got lazy or they didn't want to run their own servers that basically you had these giant server farms that are, you know, with the big tech companies like Google and Facebook and so on, that we've become essentially vulnerable because they're a trusted third party that determines everything about like your account and, you know, what you can push out and so on. And, you know, like especially after, COVID and, the election in 2020 and everything else, it just, a lot of views were being suppressed. So it felt like the right time for something like Nostra to come along. And I got in and I think I put out a tweet fairly early saying like, this makes me as excited as the original internet and Bitcoin. That's kind of been my view on it. I always thought that something like Lightning would enable this sort of like decentralized internet. And lo and behold, Nostra ended up being that. The first sort of iteration is around sort of tweets and things like that. But I expect it to grow in lots of different directions. And we're sort of seeing it, right? Like there are people that use it sort of as a blogging platform. There are other people that are You know, setting up stores and so on. I mean, that none of that's really mature yet, but that's what I expect Nostr to become, is sort of like a parallel economy that no one really controls. And that makes it really powerful because you're self-sovereign over your own store and you can go buy stuff and you can do bilateral transactions, though trusted third party. And we can do that because we have Bitcoin, and you have this bilateral transaction capability with no trusted third party. And if you can do that with both data and, you know, like actual monetary transactions, you can do a lot. And that's, I think, the way the internet should be. That's the only way it's going to really be sort of free and not subject to the censorship regimes of, you know, various governments and so on. So, yeah, I see it as a very hopeful and positive thing. Like as far as like how it's going to develop and what's going to happen, I have no idea, but I'm excited about it because I see the potential.
Yeah, the coupling of the data transfer and the monetary value transfer is really interesting. In your mind, is there like a path dependence between those things? Because people have been trying to do micropayments on the internet for years and years. And of course, if they're custodial micropayments, there are huge limits to that, especially with interoperability. It's actually like honestly kind of strange that you don't have interoperable micropayments in any centralized systems, because that seems like a huge value proposition of having micropayments in the first place. But finally, we have non-custodial money with Bitcoin and micropayments are popping off in Nostr. So did it, you know, in your mind, did it take both of those things for that to happen? Which came first? Did Nostr make micropayments with Bitcoin possible, or did Bitcoin make micropayments on Nostr possible, or is it kind of both?
I mean, my take on it is that Lightning enabled Nostr, because the key thing to a decentralized network is that people need to run their own servers. If you're not running your own server, then there's going to be some server somewhere that serves up the data, and that's going to be the center, right? Like that's the natural centralization point if you don't have too many servers. This is why it's so important to run your own node, right? Like in Bitcoin, because you're essentially running your own server and not depending on somebody else to tell you the truth of something. And this is also why altcoins are all like just smoke and mirrors and just LARPing at decentralization, because none of them have that as a goal. But, you know, because we have Bitcoin, because we have this culture where it is normal to run your own server, we got people to run Lightning servers as well. And that allows for micropayments and lots of other things. But, you know, that was just sort of like, you know, an evolution off of the original Bitcoin node running. And now that we have like a large community of people that are willing to run their own software that serves up data and so on, it makes Nostr possible because there was a compelling financial reason to do so. Now you have, you know, a more, you know, you can sort of like ride on the back of that and have your own server for data as well. And that's essentially where we've gone, is that we built over layers, and now we have this Nostr layer where you can trade data and so on without some third party, and that's really powerful. And we saw some of that, I think, earlier on with BitTorrent, but really it was just for transfer of large amounts of data. This is becoming a lot less about you know, quantities of data or large quantities of data moving back and forth, and more about sort of like speech and expression moving back and forth. And that's important. And I can see this becoming a, you know, an alternative to a lot of the centralized stuff, which I expect to start. I mean, it's already breaking down to a large degree. I think before Elon Musk bought Twitter, you know, pretty much every big platform was censoring all kinds of news and, you know, perspectives and things like that. And because Nostr exists, now everybody else has to sort of like make theirs a little more open, even if it's centralized. And that's sort of the pattern that we're seeing, is okay, like if we keep censoring this, I mean, you have cartel behavior, and cartels are not stable. So you get defections like Twitter, and you get more defections because, you know, like if Elon Musk is more successful, well, then guess what? Like Facebook and Google are going to have to follow suit. Otherwise, like everyone's leaving. So, and that seems to be what's happening to some degree is there's a game theory at play because Nocer exists, and that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Would you say that it's possible for Nocer to succeed even if it doesn't get adopted? You know, if it becomes this sort of like forcing function for larger platforms to start acting responsibly. You know, I was just listening to Jack Mahler's this morning. Talking about how, you know, if he was Jerome Powell, he would just keep raising rates because that's essentially what Bitcoin is going to do. And, you know, Bitcoin only works if governments are not responsible. And Nostru only works if large platforms are not responsible.
Well, so to some degree, I think, yeah, it does incentivize, you know, big platforms to be a little more open. But I mean, like as far as Nostr is concerned, I think it's already successful, right? Like there's a bunch of people on it and you can't censor it. I you know, people can post whatever they like and relays can relay whatever they like. So it's there's no central place that you're going to be able to just sort of shut down various things, which you have the power to do on a lot of these platforms. So I think that'll always be valuable, especially in like, you know, countries that are more authoritarian and so on. So like, you know, regardless of, you know, the adoption rate or whatever, it's always going to be available in the background. For now, like a lot of people use stuff like Signal and Telegram and things like that. But you have to understand those are centralized. And at some point that what's going to happen is they're going to get compromised. We're kind of seeing that with Telegram right now. The founder has been arrested, facing 20 years in prison, probably going to have to provide some sort of backdoor to Telegram to plead out or something like that and do it without like telling anybody. But that's kind of what happens to these platforms. So I think of Nostr for most people as sort of like insurance. Even if the big tech companies are behaving well, you never really know because they might be providing a lot of this data to, you know, a FISA court or something like that, where you have no idea what's going on and they don't have to reveal anything. In which case, okay, like let's use this other more secure form of communication, more secure. Like I know that this private key is not like mine and no one's going to be able to read it unless they have it. So, you know, that's end-to-end encryption without any trust in a third party. That's huge. And that sort of thing, like, you know, existed a while ago with like PGP and stuff, but this is like way more usable, way easier to understand sort of like the security model and stuff. And you don't have to go and do like encryption and all this other stuff. It's just sort of standardized and easy to use, and it's a protocol. So I see it as something that will exist for a while, and you know, unless something else, like maybe a better protocol comes along, then maybe it can defeat it. But I don't think even then, because you see with stuff like IPv4, like the worst stuff lasts longer just because people are using
JavaScript.
yeah, and you know, people don't want to build new software even if the protocol is better, because it's been hardened and so on. So I see it as something that'll stick around for a while, and I think it's already successful. And you know, it's not about the number of users; it's about like technology existing so that you can do that communication in a way that's secure and so on. And like uncensorable. Those are all good things. And I expect that to continue to grow. And, you know, it's sort of like a very different beast. You're not going for a number of eyeballs. You're not going for, you know, ads and things like that. So the metrics, I think, for Nostr's success are very different than, say, like Facebook, where, you know, they measure by, you know, a lifetime value of a user and, you know, how many users they have and things like that. You can have Nostr be, you know, 10,000 people for the rest of its life and it can totally be successful. I think it would be better if more people join, just because I think it would be better for them to have more privacy and things like that. You can't make people care. You can show them, you know, like the water, but you can't make them drink or whatever. So for me, I would say that it's already successful. There's a lot of enthusiasm. There's a lot of development. There's a lot of cool things being built on it and people are using it. And, the degree to which, you know, other platforms, follow suit or don't follow suit doesn't really even matter because they're different beasts.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's a different way to frame it. I normally think of Nostr's success in terms of eating Facebook because I want my friends to stop using Facebook so that their data isn't getting harvested and so they're not being fed ads and toxic engagement sort of content. But that is a very negative vision for Nostr. While that's valid to a certain extent, I always like to ask people, what is your positive vision for the future? So what is in your mind a positive vision for social media? Like, what is it good for? Why would you want to attract people to it? Is it just private communication, or is there more to it that social media brings to the world and brings to society that, just regular face-to-face conversation, books, that kind of, older style media can't really fulfill?
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure what the value of social media is. I think, like, back when it began, 2005, 6, 7, and, I was fairly early on in Facebook, and I got to see, this is what so-and-so is doing. But, like, these are people that I knew, like, 10 years before that, and, now it's been, like, 20 or 30 years, and it's like, okay, like, you had this illusion of being connected to them, but not really. And, as ads creeped in, it was pretty obvious that the relationship was very thin and that there wasn't much that I was getting out of it, but they were getting a lot out of me through the ad placements and so on. And it got to a point where, I left Facebook, I think 2017 or 18, something like that. And, it got to a point where, I was scrolling through my wife's Facebook after, and it's, just like ads for all kinds of things. But then, like, people started selling stuff on Facebook, right? Like, they were using it as a marketing channel. They were monetizing their friends, which honestly, like, is kind of gross, right? Like, you're monetizing your friends, right? Like, you're taking, the friend networks that you have, which are kind of thin to begin with, and then you're trying to use it for sales so that you can make a profit. And usually it's like, they're selling some vitamins or clothes or, some random juice or whatever. And it just kind of made me really sad because it was like, it became kind of this, this channel for people to sort of, advertise stuff to each other, and people buy it not necessarily because they need something, but because they feel like that's something that they need to do for the relationship or something like that. I'm kind of skeptical on the value of social media because I do think that there's a depth that needs to be in order for you to get something out of it, right? Like, I mean, there are shallow relationships that can be productive. I mean, I don't know, like, the owner of the gym that I go to, right? But, like, it's useful. But, it should kind of be limited to the relationship that I have. I don't need to know that he went to a barbecue last week and, drunk bong pictures or something. Like, I don't want to know that. I don't need to know that. It's not something, it almost feels like I'm violating their privacy, but they're kind of broadcasting. It's, So I'm very skeptical of just social media in general. Now, I do see value in something like Twitter, and I see sort of like a Musk's vision, right? He wants to make it an everything app because he realizes this is basically like how people are getting news. And people like myself, you know, that's where I go to see what's actually going on, right? I don't watch like Fox News or CNN or whatever. I just don't. I don't have time. I don't like the ads. I don't want to listen to sort of like sound bites that are obviously biased or whatever. I just, you know, like show me primary sources or whatever. And that has some value, right? Where if you actually have news or takes or interesting things that people want to know about, whether it's events or ideas or something like that, that can be valuable. But like social media doesn't have that. It's very like narcissistic. It's very much, oh, here's what I'm doing and you should care. Why should I care? So you had like a nice looking meal at a restaurant, like, and you posted like a picture of yourself like in a nice outfit. Like, I don't care, right? Like those are not that relevant for me. But that's where it's kind of gone, and you get sort of like that weird hyper competitive status game that like that enters through that arena, and it becomes extremely shallow instead of sort of like the relationships that are a lot more satisfactory. So I see value in sort of like news for newsmakers or new reporters, or, you know, like basically everyone's kind of like a journalist on X or Noster or whatever. That I can see the value of, but, you know, like posting pictures of like, you know, a nice outfit you wore or something like that, I don't see too much value in that. It's kind of like validation seeking or something like that, which, I mean, it's a poor substitute for real virtue.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. And, you know, the censorship resistance is what got everyone kind of into Noster in the first place in general. And that was a fleeing from a problem with journalism. But social media is, because it's digital, it's this like infinitely configurable thing. There is as many different categories of social media as there are social media products. Like Instagram is substantially different from Discord. Discord is substantially different even from Slack, even though they have basically the same design and architecture. But, you know, Discord brands itself as like a fun place to hang out, and Slack is like a place to get some work done. And there are obviously these different categories, and some are more productive than others. You know, one of the notes that you wrote recently that caught my eye, you said, "It saddens me to know that there are people so crippled with anxiety that they live their lives online. One of the things COVID took from us is a sense of communal living, where people did stuff together and that was fun. It used to be a deep human need. Now a generation gets anxiety thinking about engaging in it." And I think that is very insightful, but and also sort of self-evident. There's something about the subjective experience of people in their lives and on the internet that makes it hard to state those kind of absolutes. I agree with that, but I also have a functioning community that doesn't exist in, you know, like live streamer, gamer sort of culture. If I did, and that was the connection that I had, then maybe online venues could be the most productive form of community that I have, and togetherness. But I have met people like that who live entirely online. And, you know, the particular person I'm thinking about had a lot of problems, a lot of anxiety, exactly like you're pointing out. So, you know, apart from journalism, are there areas in social media that you can think of that are productive to live online? You know, one of the main goals that I've set out to do with my work is to help support communities, particularly churches. And, you know, I think that looks mostly like coordinating events or maybe buying and selling things within a network of trust. But that's like a pretty minor role for social media compared with, you know, how much it's taken over our lives.
Yeah, I would say that it's a good supplement to a real community, but it's a poor substitute for community in general. And unfortunately for a lot of people, it ends up being sort of like the primary thing, especially if you are riddled with anxiety, and a lot of people are. I mean, they basically scared us for like 3 years saying, like, you can't go outside, and, you know, if you contact people, you're going to kill grandma and stuff like that. So I think it's a lot harder for, especially like the younger generation that's basically grown up with COVID, right? Like, where, you know, it's weird to like go out, and it's more normal to interact more online, where then it be like the online presence becomes like sort of the primary thing. And that there's something unhealthy about that, right? Especially as you get sort of like the typical high school behavior, like writ large on in these communities. I mean, that said, there's a lot of good that can happen, you know, if you have a community. I still remember like when email first came on, and, you know, like we needed to coordinate something, and instead of like having a meeting where you had to coordinate like three different schedules and call back and forth and stuff, we just like discussed the stuff over email. And it was like, isn't email awesome? Like, you don't have to like write letters back and forth or have meetings and do that. You can just sort of do things asynchronously. And that's the power of sort of like just the internet in general, and communication online in particular, is this idea that you can communicate sort of in a way that we didn't really have the option to do before. You didn't have you know, group threads and things like that. I mean, you could, you, like, if you needed to get agreement from four people in your office, you can send out the same memo to four people, and then like they would have to figure like they would send something or whatever, and it would get kind of complicated, but it wasn't easy to go do that. Now you just like reply all, and it's pretty simple to like do that sort of communication, and even easier on like group threads and on like Telegram or something like that. It's much easier to do that sort of stuff. So I mean, there's obviously benefits to doing things that way, and, you know, if you have the ability to post pictures and stuff, it can be very productive. But what we're finding is that a lot of it is also not productive. It's actually like detrimental to a lot of people. Instead of you know, figuring out like a way to make the community better, it actually, like, you know, you get the one toxic person in there that's able to like sort of poison everything, and you know, bullying people or bad behavior and things like that. You know, all the sort of human frailties and sin like sort of come through online as well. And yeah, that can be kind of bad. In a sense, I guess what social media lets you do is get closer a little faster, because you do sort of like have more interactions per hour or whatever, and it's sort of on constantly, whereas like in person, like there's a limit to how much like you can do that, unless like you happen to live next door or whatever. So in that sense, I mean, it can be good, but, you know, there's a lot of failing, and you know, it needs to be sort of like a supplement, I think, to real life interaction and a real community and some level of commitment towards like bettering yourselves, instead of just sort of, hey, let's make a group and we'll, I mean, and you start fighting and doing all kinds of weird stuff. So, yeah, it amplifies whatever, you know, your nature, the nature of the group is supposed to be, or whatever the relationship is supposed to be. And because of the presence of ads and things like that, it tends to take it in a negative direction.
Yeah, I wonder if by the removal of the kind of profit motive in legacy social media, Nostr can actually, you know, in addition to fixing what's wrong with the good parts of social media, like the journalistic side, sort of disincentivize engagement, right? Because if no one's trying to, you know, mine data or make money off of ads on Nostr because everything is like a hobby project or, you know, ethically opposed to those kind of things in the first place, you know, it could result in a more satisfying social media experience with the time spent on the platform, and then a huge decrease in the amount of time spent on the platform. Like one metric for Nostr's success might be the ratio of how many people use Nostr and then for how long. And the higher that ratio is, the better we're doing. You know, if I can spend 10 minutes on social media a week rather than 6-10 hours, and have gather the same amount of information from journalists that I appreciate and have a much more satisfying interpersonal experience through, you know, the presentation of how things are, that would be a massive improvement in my book. You know, one thing and like coming up with patterns for this is really hard. But one thing I've come up with is the idea of presenting people rather than notes. Right. Because if you present notes in a feed, the people who talk a lot end up dominating your feed. And then you also have, even with 100 or 200 people you follow, you can't possibly get to the bottom of your feed. That's why infinite scroll exists. And so social media has put all of these, all of this signal and noise together into one big bucket. And in order to find the signal, you have to sift through all the noise. And it's a Sisyphean task, never ends. You know, every time you wake up, there's more stuff to get through and you can't get to the bottom of it. Whereas if you have something that can summarize things or pick and choose elements that are interesting to you, in addition to just by people that you follow, you can reduce the amount of information that you have to process and just create like a healthier and more productive social media sort of experience. Do you have any thoughts on that or like?
I mean, it's interesting how social media has evolved, because at least initially with like MySpace and Facebook, or even like Friendster, if you go way back, or Zynga or blogs and things like that, it used to be that you would go to a particular page and go check out what's new and so on. And, you know, there'd be people writing on like the walls on each person's like profile, right? Happy birthday or something like that. That used to be normal, where you had to sort of like go to a destination to interact with that person, right? So it became, it was like very much more person focused, because you had to go to that person or go to their page, something like that, before you can interact with them. Then came, I think, what really kind of made it more addictive, but also like less personal. And that was the media feed. And I think to some degree it was Facebook trying to compete with Twitter. This idea that, you know, you would have like this feed of stuff and you'd be constantly like engaged with it and so on, instead of having to go to a destination. And I get why they did it. I suspect it's mostly around like just convenience and getting people addicted. But I don't know if that's necessarily the right one, right? Like you could have a completely different Nostr interface where you can you have all your people that you follow in a grid or something like that. And, you know, if they're updating something, like you can see some visual cue that they've updated. But, you know, vast majority of people, maybe they don't. And that's okay. But you click through and interact with them, or, you know, you see that it's their birthday, you go say happy birthday or some like that used to be the key part of what made the social media interaction way more personal. They've sort of like depersonalized it by taking away stuff like relationship status and, what was it, like birthdays and stuff like that. Like,
yeah, the MySpace wall was peak social media.
Yeah, and you can say that, right? Like, and that was sort of like how it felt a little more like a community. But once it became a feed, then you can mix ads into it, and now it becomes just sort of like not a community at all. It's just specifically to get you addicted. And that's the way it's evolved. But yeah, I think like if you do make it more people and relationship centered, it could totally be a very different experience, and maybe going backwards towards what was actually a little more humane back when social media started.
Yeah, do you think that's something that people are broadly ready for, or is there a way to engineer an interface to encourage that kind of engagement away from the more addictive platforms? I mean, it still seems like the majority of people who use social media have this revealed preference for stimulation. You just think of the success of TikTok, like, I don't care where it's coming from, just use an algorithm, give me something interesting. I don't even care if it's true. I will reshare it because I enjoyed it. Just like basically lowest common denominator sort of brain tickling. Is there a way to, okay, so apart from virtue, right, encourage people to move back? It seems to me that while there can be some small technological solutions in order to create a space that can cultivate healthy relationships over social media, people actually adopting that requires a different kind of value system that we've currently been, either both chosen and been encouraged to adopt through, mainstream media and through the fiat system. Or would you say that virtue is the thing that we have to recover prior to getting to the internet that we really want to have?
Yeah, it's a good question. I suspect that if you had multiple interface options and you design something from the bottom up that's more focused on the person or the relationship, that there would be people that use it. Now, it's maybe not going to make money, and it might be something that a coder has to do because, that's what the coder wants. But I think there's a market for it. The thing is, like, a lot of people have quit Facebook, right? A lot of people have quit Instagram and things like that, and TikTok, largely because it's a one-size-fits-all kind of thing where you're given a particular interface. There's some customization that you can do, but it doesn't let you use it the way you want to use it because you're the product, and you have to be sort of like exposed to the things that they want to expose you to. If you have more control, what would you choose? And I mean, you can doom scroll all day, but I think most people understand that that's not a good behavior. And, with something like Twitter, if you're doom scrolling it too much, then like the only other option is to delete the app. Whereas with something like Noster, you can, I don't know, maybe have a different client that's more focused on, people or the people that you follow or are following you or something. Like there's many different ways to engage with the system, and an interface that is customized to how you want to use it, I think would have a market. That's not to say that it's going to necessarily make money, but I mean, I can see that kind of future happening where you have a bunch of people that are like, you know what, like, I don't want like just a infinite doom scrollable kind of thing. Or maybe I do, and I just want like funny cat videos or whatever, in which case, like maybe that's the way the client sort of evolves. But I think for a lot of people, they have a desire, they recognize when things are bad for them and want to change things up. So like right now, for example, I have my computer that we are recording on, and I purposefully set color filters so that it's all black and white. So this is a way for me to stop myself from doom scrolling on like YouTube or something. I also have other plugins in there, so all the video recommended videos don't come up. It's just kind of a blank search box when I go to YouTube, for example, to make it so that I don't waste my time doing that. And that's sort of like self-restraining behavior. And most of these end up being sort of like hacks around what they want you to do. But Noster has the potential to make that a lot easier so that you don't get addicted and you use it the way that's actually productive and beneficial for you instead of beneficial for some central entity that's trying to make money off of you. So ultimately, I think that's where Noster needs to go. It can't just be a copy of Twitter because, I mean, I guess it can be, but that's not going to fit the needs of everybody. Everyone's going to have different sort of things that they want out of it. And I don't know. I would like to see maybe a client that does just, you know, the people you follow as like, you know, in a grid or something like that and give me an indicator, okay, like that person said something, let's go check out what they're saying. Or I don't know, maybe they have like little lines between people if they're like interacting in some interesting way and you want to see what conversation they're having and you can like sort of listen in on that instead of an infinite feed scroll. You can be kind of done after a while, and I think that would be a good thing instead of having infinite content, having some sort of like limitations on the content that you have so that you're not completely addicted.
Yeah, and ironically, people actually seem more willing to pay for the things that keep them off of social media than for social media itself. I totally agree that those other formats would be awesome. I have done a prototype, a couple prototypes. One is keepub.coracle.social, and that one kind of like it dredges up the people who post least often and show those posts at kind of the top of the feed with a little summary that says, here's how many times this person has posted recently. So it kind of eliminates some of the noise. And that was like a first step towards this. But I like a lot of the ideas that you're mentioning. Go ahead.
So one more thing. So one of the things about social media that's pretty bad is that it has a very strong present bias, right? Like, so whatever just came up in the last couple of days or whatever. And the internet used to not be like that. You'd have a blog post that was written years ago and people would still refer back to it and things like that. All the new social media stuff is almost always just sort of constant churn of new content. I'd like to see a client that focuses on old content that has a lot of value, right? So if like some significant percentage of the people that you follow found like something or retweeted or, you know, reposted something, that those are sort of like dredged up from the past instead of, just the content that's right now. So you were talking about dredging up content from people that don't post often. I would also like to dredge content from the past instead of only content that's right now. And that discoverability, I think, would be fantastic because you see like evergreen content that, I don't know, maybe you saw a while ago and then you forget it, but then it sort of pops back up again and you're like, oh wow, that was a really great post, or as a really cool video, or that was a really cool discussion. Twitter sort of has that with bookmarks and stuff, but I would like to see more of that because I think it's the evergreen content that's actually more valuable in the end. It's not just sort of like this they only make it that way because they live off of ads, and that's a way to get you to stay on for a while. It's like, oh, what else is new? What's coming on right now? Instead of, okay, here's stuff in the past, and here's what's actually valuable, it's a cool discussion, or it's a cool article. Like, I'd like to see more.
Yeah, agreed. I love the old internet. It's hard to get into because, you know, interface design has come so far, but there's a lot of old sites out there that have just a wealth of information. I had a question about cicadas a while ago, so I Googled my question about cicadas, and I found cicadamania.com, and it's like, I almost had a stroke. It was so much information about cicadas. They were like, here's a daily like academic article about cicadas. Are you like, get excited about it? It was, and not in like a cancerous, you know, recency bias kind of way. It was just like, we love cicadas so much and we want you to love cicadas too. It was refreshing. And I spent 5 minutes on the site, got my question answered, but there was a wealth of information. You know, nerds are the best. I know some people that are just super into trains, and, you know, my friend will look at like a bolt and he'll be like, oh, this bolt design was invented in 1872 as a result of Reconstruction and like a shortage and whatever. And it actually like broke a lot of ground. And that's real stuff. Like that's real life. And there's so much beauty to the depth of the world that you don't often get when you kind of are skimming across the top of social media. So yeah, I totally agree. The more we can do to kind of like sound the depths of relationships or material, the better. And I wanted to ask, so like another one of your notes that caught my eye is you were talking about virtue and how it's integral. You know, you want to seek virtue as a whole, not just the part that happens to be useful to you right now. And we've already kind of touched on some of this stuff, but like, how does the pursuit of virtue and the cultivation of virtue fit into social media in your mind?
Yeah, I think it's actually like the other way. Social media like encourages vice, right? Like it encourages sort of like behavior that's not very low time preference or, you know, prudent. It's not very temperate, right? Like doing things the right amount. In fact, it encourages addictions or and things of that nature. It's not really about doing the right thing. It's actually quite narcissistic, and it's you know, that it doesn't require much courage, right? Like it's just sort of half the people out there are just lurkers that just use it as entertainment rather than posting something or saying something interesting or worthwhile. So I see it as a way to sort of indulge your vices. And, you know, behind the keyboard, you can pretty much, you know, act however way. People might call you out, but you can ignore them, and most people do. So it ends up like not making you more virtuous, because honestly, virtue requires, you know, more interaction, like people, decisions, you know, doing the right thing and planning and things like that, which, you know, because they're essentially selling you ads and stuff, you don't really get much of. And there's very little actual cultivation of the things that would make you a better person. And instead, you get a lot of vices, a lot of people that, you know, do degenerate gambling or whatever, that I think are exacerbated by social media. You get communities of those people that are sort of like telling each other, oh, this is so great, and, you know, we're the people that are doing the right thing or whatever, or they rationalize it or justify it, or and you have the best rationalizations and justifications available for any kind of vice out there. So it ends up being quite harmful because it's not really a community. Now, if you do have a community online and stuff, and you know, I don't know, maybe you have a Zoom meeting with some people once a week or something like that, like, and they're helping you like achieve your goals and you know, restrain yourself from doing things that are destructive or whatever, that would be actually very useful. But, you know, there's a reason why AA isn't online, right? Like there's like those people actually physically meet, and they talk about, you know, what they're going through and encourage each other. It's just not a great place to develop that stuff. And it's there's something about physical presence that makes it that makes virtue a lot easier than, and vice a lot harder. Whereas online, vice is a lot easier and virtue is a lot harder.
Yeah, that's interesting. And, you know, part of virtue is taking what you were given and doing your best with it. And locality is a particular form of givenness. And you know, digital technology allows us to transcend a lot of that givenness and connect with people who are you know, our choice or even, you know, farmed out to an algorithm. So like I'm reaching all the way across the world in order to connect these particular people for some reason. But, you know, there are people who are put near me who may not be as interesting or stimulating to me, but who actually need me and who I also need. You know, the sort of randomness, random assortment of the of people in physical localities is seems to be maybe God's way of saying, like, here's, you know, who is my neighbor? Well, this is your literal neighbor. So maybe you should, you know, engage with them more. And of course, that can be really hard because the people who are near you may not share as much as with you as the people far away. It may be more difficult. You know, you wrote a book a while ago called Fiat Ruins Everything. And you kind of paint Bitcoin in the picture, paint this picture of Bitcoin as a rehabilitation of society insofar as society's vices are based in the corruption of money. Do you think that Nostr could fill a similar role? So like social media ruins everything, right? And so we have all these vices that are downstream from social media and advertising and all this kind of thing. Could Nostr be like a vehicle of reform rather than mere restraint? Because we've been mostly talking about ways that social media could be less bad, but could it actually be like a vehicle similar to how Bitcoin is to help us to kind of rediscover what's important and what's honest?
Well, if I think about Bitcoin, the main virtue of Bitcoin is that it's not fiat. fiat ruins a lot of stuff, so by removing fiat from the equation, it doesn't get ruined, right? Like if you have sound money, a lot of things don't get ruined and things are a lot better just from not having something assaulted all the time. I suspect social media is the same way. If Nostr can somehow remove the power, remove social media from a lot of people, or at least the worst aspects of social media from people, then it'll be just good from the sense that like you're not feeling like you're having to compete constantly in weird status games and things like that. So that's a possibility. I don't know if there's as much compelling reason to join Nostr for that particular thing, because while people do recognize that, you know, social media is harmful to them, they still feel some significant need to go on it, and it's kind of their choice. Right now, for most people, it's just sort of like a one or a zero. You're either on social media or you're not. Maybe there's room for Nostr to have like a healthier social media. Maybe that's more community focused. It's not right now. Let's just sort of call it what it is. That's not where it is right now, but it is possible that it could go in that direction. And if it does, then great. It maybe can fix a lot of what's wrong with social media and have better interactions where it's more human and it's more relationship focus instead of what's entertaining me focus. That could be good. But I'm not ready to say that there's going to be a significant correction on that until this incentive kind of gets removed ultimately, which I don't think it will, because social media companies make so much money just selling ads and things like that. So yeah, how do you account for that or change that or make things better? I think you need kind of a very different paradigm, because essentially like you have Twitter, and everyone basically copied Twitter, and it's not just Nostr, it's like Threads and you know, Instagram to some degree, and you know, I think there's something called Gab, and there's a whole bunch of different types of social media that have all cloned Twitter and said, okay, like that's not how you build something that's focused on virtue. You're taking in a lot of something that was optimized for a particular purpose, which was essentially to sell your data. If you want some other purpose, then it's going to be designed very differently. The user experience is going to be very different, and so on. So All that's to say that, Nostr isn't there right now, but it could be. And it's up to a lot of developers and user experience people and people that are trying to use it for a different purpose that come up with something different, and maybe they hit on the right formula that the market really likes.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. It doesn't seem like a very very optimistic project to create a healthy form of social media, but that's what I'm trying to do, and hopefully I can prove those predictions wrong. It is funny. Like, I was reading the story of Absalom to my kids this morning, and when he first kind of goes off the rails, he comes back to Jerusalem, and he hires a bunch of people to run around in front of him while he rides his horse and chariot, proclaiming Absalom, and he just sits at the gates of the city and says really loudly, "Oh, if only I were king, I would solve these problems." And, you know, Absalom ends up being just the worst. He's all style over substance. And, you know, technology is an amplification of people. You know, good and evil basically are manifest in people. Good to the extent that we have God's spirit guiding us and directing us, and evil to the extent that we give ourselves over to our own desires. And so any technology has to be designed in such a way as to amplify God's work in us rather than, our own work in us. Social media seems to be in that former category, but I haven't discovered anything essential about it that necessarily puts it there. So I hope very much that we can do better, but it's definitely an open question to me still.
I mean, I think it can be better. It's so powerful, and you do have a communication channel that's asynchronous, and you there's a lot that you can do with it. It's just no one has been incentivized to create it for the purpose of the people that are actually participating. It's almost always, everything from Snapchat to, Twitter or whatever, it's all been based on how do I get lots of money from this person, or how do I exploit this? That's been their incentive. If the incentive is different and it's around how can we make the people's lives better or more virtuous, that would be probably a very different and radical design, and it would be I think Facebook had this feature for a little bit, but it stopped, where it would go through like your history with a particular person and tell you, okay, here's how your interaction has been. Something like that, I think, would be useful, right? Like to reconnect with somebody. Oh yeah, we did this and this, and I even forgot about this event. There are ways to sort of like dredge up memories to make you feel more grateful. There are ways to encourage people based on the interactions that you've had with them online already. There's a lot of good that you can do, and I know that happens still online. It's just a matter of identifying what those might be and figuring out an interface that gets you to do more of that. I think ultimately that would be what a healthy social network would look like, where you're helping people towards virtue, and you're not sort of like monetizing them. I guess it would be much more about helping them grow as people. And I don't know, even like stupid stuff, right? Bumble, I think, was what initially started as like a way to connect people that didn't know each other that might be good for dating or whatever. Like, a social network is extremely useful for stuff like dating or job searches and things like that. It's just there's nobody really like focused on that, right? If you go to somebody and they're like, "Hey, what's up? What are you thinking about?" Or you know, what are you, what's on your mind these days? And you go, you know what, I really want to get married, but I can't seem to find the right person. Well, that person immediately thinks of, hey, you know, I know this person, that person, or, you know, hey, I don't have a job right now. Immediately they go, okay, well, I know this company, that company, or this opportunity or whatever. Like that's never been really like explored that well in social media, right? It's they put all of the onus on you to go and do that instead of helping you like make those connections and stuff, because that's where like relationships really pay off, is oftentimes when you're like, oh, okay, like this person needs something and you know just the right other person to connect that person with. Like there's very little of that online, honestly, in any of this social media. It's all entertainment and narcissistic and stuff. So you know, the only people that seem to be motivated are like recruiters or something for a company. If instead you had a social media that was more geared towards the relationship and, you know, how can I help this person, right? Like I would love to see like a like imagine a NoSurf interface where you have all the people that you follow, and maybe like you have a different category. It's not even people you follow. It's like people that you actually know in person, right? Or people that you care about, that you're interested in strengthening your relationship with them or something like that. And they have in their profile some list of things that they're looking for at the moment, right? Like, okay, I'm hiring for this position, or I am looking for somebody to like lead around for my startup or whatever. And like you could kind of help them without them even necessarily knowing that you are, right? Like, and that's something that happens in community all the time, where you kind of get surprised when you put out a need out there and people sort of like help you out. And you know, you have to be careful, obviously, because you don't want to like publicly blast everybody. But that sort of thing is completely normal in a community and has a lot of value. But I haven't seen anything like that in social media, where it was like sort of confined to the people that you knew. It's almost always like just completely public. Like, hey, everybody, I have cancer. Go put money into my GoFundMe. Or just like sort of you have to go do all the work to go and get something that you need. There's no in between, right? There's no, hey, like just normal relationship stuff that I think a lot of people would love to get into, right? Like that would love to, like, and if you have good relationships, the people that care about you want to help you out. Right. It's like, you know, I just graduated, or my son just graduated college. He's looking for some position in San Francisco or something. You're like, okay, yeah, I know these people, and yeah, this kid's like pretty good. And what, like those kinds of connections that you can make, I feel like that's where the real value of social media could be. And that's where you're sort of like improving each other's lives. And, but, you know, it's not really happening, and it's a big missed opportunity, in my opinion.
Yeah, and when that kind of thing does happen, it's usually consumer oriented. So, like, yeah, you know, here's your social graph, and here's the people who like these books or this content, and you know, it's all about consuming more content, which of course gets back to that profit motive. So, yeah, I really appreciate all your thoughts. You are a very creative and deep thinker. Hopefully a lot of these ideas are something that we can unleash our army of idealist autists on to create.
I give out free ideas all the time. I'm hoping, yeah, Somebody will build them. But yeah,
ideas are cheap. That's true. But yeah. I appreciate your thoughts. This is definitely deepened my understanding of the topic. And I think that's a good place to leave it. But do you have any like final thoughts that you want to leave people with?
I mean, it's Noster is still sort of like being built, and really, I think people need to say stuff or use it in a particular way to give all the developers hints on like what direction you want it to go. If you're using it exactly like Twitter, I think you're kind of missing the point, right? This has the potential to change things radically in how you consume content or how you produce content. And, you know, think about it and, you know, get feedback or shout it from the rooftops or whatever. But like there's a lot more potential for things here. And I really do hope that more people get involved in trying to make things the way they want it to be. That would be beneficial for them instead of sort of copycatting whatever already exists that's obviously been optimized for ads.
Yeah, and Noster makes it really easy. It's a lot easier to build on Noster and not have to create an entire social network from scratch every time. So, yeah, if you're out there, you're a developer, or even if you're not a developer looking for a project, put some together. Throw it out there on Noster. People are really interested in new ideas. So, I'd like to thank you, Jimmy, for coming on. I really appreciate your time, and this was an awesome conversation.
Well, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And we will see y'all on Noster.